It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Earlier this year, the Postal Service announced plans to cancel Saturday mail delivery. Now comes word the Postal Service has canceled its cancellation plans. Joining us to talk about the continual struggles of the U.S. Postal Service is Rick Geddes, an associate professor in the Department of Policy Analysis and Management at Cornell University. Rick Geddes, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for inviting me, Paul.
Why has the Postal Service canceled its plan to end Saturday delivery?
Well, the Postal Service canceled its plan because Congress decided that it didn't have the authority to unilaterally cancel Saturday letter delivery, Paul. And let's keep in mind that the Postal Service's proposal was not to end all deliveries on Saturday, but only those for letters. It would have continued delivering parcels and packages, for example. But Congress said, hey, wait, we are the ones who determine how frequent mail delivery will be, not you, the Postal Service, and we have decided that you cannot eliminate on your own authority Saturday delivery. So today the Postal Service said uncle and agreed that they would continue with Saturday letter delivery.
Now, ending Saturday delivery was supposed to save the Postal Service $2 billion. At a time when it's losing money, was this a good idea?
Well, I think the idea of reducing the frequency of letter delivery in the face of rapidly declining demand for first-class mail, Paul, is a good idea. The Postal Service lost $12 billion in its 2012 fiscal year, and the first quarter of its fiscal year, which was the final 3 months of 2012, is its first quarter of 2013, it lost over another $1.2 billion. So the Postal Service is really losing money at an incredible rate, and that is mainly because it has suffered a one-third drop in its core service. And its core service is the delivery of first-class letter mail, which peaked in 2001 and has declined by over a third since that time, Paul. And that's really important for the Postal Service because that's its most profitable activity. It's not only the social sort of reason for the Postal Service being a government-owned firm, it's also its most profitable. It makes about three times the amount of profit on each piece of first-class mail that it makes off of standard mail, or what some people call junk mail. So when you see those big declines in first-class mail, that's a big problem for the Postal Service, Paul.
In a piece that you wrote for CNN, you said ending Saturday delivery would not save the Postal Service. What needs to be done to save the Postal Service, to make it sustainable for the long term?
Well, that's a great question, Paul. And I think there is an emerging consensus amongst people who study these issues that what needs to happen is the Postal Service needs to be freed up in a commercial sense, freed up to make basic business decisions that other delivery companies like United Parcel Service, like Federal Express, like DHL, make on a daily basis. And these are decisions about how do you set prices, decisions about how frequent service is going to be, how fast service is going to be, what new types of products and services you want to offer. Those sorts of basic business decisions need to be freed up to allow the Postal Service to become more innovative. And the idea is not so much more cost-cutting. The previous Postmaster General, a guy named Jack Potter, reduced the size of the postal workforce quite a bit. So I don't know that I don't believe the Postal Service can survive just through cost cutting. It has to do things on the revenue side to be more innovative in a commercial sense, to use the existing assets it has, which, keep in mind, Paul, it's a real business with real valuable assets. It already delivers the mail to every address in the U.S. 6 days a week. I mean, that's an amazing achievement. It's been doing that, you know, year in and year out. Those assets could be used in a more innovative way to raise revenue. So I think what people believe needs to be done, and this I'm not just making this up out of theory. This is what all 27 member countries of the European Union have done. They eliminated their postal monopolies, which is necessary in order to allow those government posts to become more innovative. And we believe that's what has to happen in the case of the Postal Service. So it's really a case of free it up to survive, Paul.
And, you know, as we when we think about the post office, as we come up with some sort of a mental image of what goes on, you know, we can imagine people filling slots with mail. We see the carriers out. The boxes are still there. So, you know, we know what the Postal Service does on a day-to-day basis, as you just described. But what would be an example of an innovative new thing that the post office could do?
Well, that's a great question, Paul. So we're all familiar with the company called Amazon and what Amazon does and its basic business model. And Amazon has been interested in a same-day service, a delivery service, for the products that people buy over Amazon. And an inexpensive delivery service, not like FedEx, where it's as we know, it's not cheap to send an item, you know, FedEx. And Amazon is interested in either a same day or next day, relatively inexpensive service. One thing the Postal Service has the skills and the assets to do is to meet that demand by companies like Asset, like Amazon, by providing those sorts of services. And of course, it could charge a bit more in terms of postage. You know, one thing to realize is that the U.S. Postal Service is really quite a bargain in terms of international postal rates. So I'm not suggesting it, you know, continue to charge rock bottom prices. It could charge Amazon a decent postage rates for that, but it could meet that demand. Another thing, Paul, suppose that a new, like a community like Ithaca, where I live in, here in upstate New York, suppose a new large business like a Walmart moved to town. That business might want all the households in that area to know of the existence and the offerings that Walmart has, so it might want to do a blanket mailing for a while. So that would be another revenue opportunity. So there are a whole series of these ways where the Postal Service could just become more attuned to the demand for the delivery of physical mail and could increase its revenues that way.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and our guest is Rick Geddes, an associate professor in the Department of Policy Analysis and Management at Cornell University. You point out, for example, that in Europe, there's a lesson to be learned from the postal services in different European countries, how they have reinvented themselves.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in Europe, Paul. Although Europe, I think, is a continental Europe, provides some good examples. For example, in the mid-90s, Deutsche Post, the German post, a very old post, privatized. Now, that's different from demonopolization. Keep in mind that there are different reforms. One is you can free it up and demonopolize to allow it to become more commercial without privatizing, or you can keep the monopoly but privatize. And that's what the German Post did, and it's become much more of a liberalized post. It formed an alliance with DHL, and it has become a respected global logistics company. The Dutch Post in Holland did something similar. The British Post, Royal Mail, is on the verge of privatization. Countries like New Zealand, where you have a lot of very remote towns, you're very sparsely populated by the standards of a lot of areas in the United States, they corporatized, which is making it more like a private corporation, but allowing it to become more of a commercial focus and to raise more revenue. And in fact, even in a sparsely populated country like New Zealand, that model has been very successful, Paul. So I think there's a lot. The U.S. is almost uniformly behind the curve in terms of serious reform of its post. And I think there's a lot of overseas examples that are successful. There's been some mistakes, some errors in the reform process we need to be aware of. But I think a lot of countries, a lot of developed countries, provide really solid examples of how the United States could reform our postal service so we don't have to just bear these endless losses and the downsizing that we've seen.
And you have said that the Postal Service needs to become more of a commercial entity. Congress would need to free up the Postal Service to do this. So what action do you see Congress taking in the future?
Well, it's always a tough call as to predict what Congress might do, Paul. But I see some folks in Congress who are very serious about postal reform and understand that we cannot continue with the current political interference, which is what we saw today, Paul, refusing to allow the Postal Service to make a fundamental business decision. I think there's a lot of people that realize that this type of intervention in the Postal Service's activities does not result in a sustainable Postal Service. And I believe that we're in a situation where something has to be done, because I don't think anyone believes that first-class mail volume is going to return and that people are going to start mailing a lot of letters again. Because people, Paul, they're now comfortable with doing banking online, which used to require a stamp. They're comfortable with paying utility bills online, which used to require a stamp. People don't write personal letters and cards the way they did 15 or even 10 years ago. So I don't think anyone, even if the U.S. economy were to make a stunning comeback, and I haven't heard predictions of that, but even if it did, I don't think anyone is expecting the mail volume to recover the way it has in the past, so that we must have, in some sense, a new business model for the U.S. Postal Service. So I believe that Congress is going to be, unless they want to give the Postal Service direct taxpayer subsidies every year, which is what they did before 1970 when it was the old post office, unless we want to go back to that regime that we moved away from when the Postal Service was created, Congress is going to have to do this. So I'm optimistic, Paul, that they'll do the right thing in some sense, and that is to give the Postal Service more commercial freedom.
And you've often compared the Postal Service in the trying to do its business in the wake of email and computers. You've compared it to the horse-drawn carriages that went out of style when cars came into being. But you said it doesn't have to be that way, that as we go along in the 21st century, we could still end up seeing the mail people, men and women, going along with their pith helmets and their shorts and whatever, delivering the mail.
Absolutely, Paul. And I'm not basing that on raw optimism. I'm basing that on experience in other countries where postal liberalization, and that's what the Europeans have called it, is postal liberalization, has allowed those businesses to become sustainable, even profitable enterprises, even in a highly electronic marketplace. In some sense, the Europeans were more comfortable with the internet and doing all these transactions online before Americans were. So Europe has had this experience with the electronic world, and we've seen that those posts can become sustainable if they're freed up from this old sort of government agency business model that we retain in the U.S. So it's not quite like the horse and buggy, where we don't see any horse and buggies out on the road there. Its transportation is completely dominated by the automobile. I believe that it's much more optimistic than that in terms of these becoming viable commercial businesses. But we really need solid policy reform for that to happen, Paul.
We hear so much about what the Postal Service does wrong, from losing money to increases in the cost of postage. Is it doing anything right?
Yes, Paul. I think, in fact, the Postal Service has done a lot of things right over the span of its life. Keep in mind that the Postal Service was, in some sense, born out of the Postal Reorganization Act of 1970, and it came into existence in July of 1971. So on that date in 1971, it ceased to be the old post office, and it became what we now know as the modern Postal Service. And that was an important act because it charged the Postal Service with breaking even, meaning that it was to pay all of its costs, cover all of its costs through the rates and fees that it raised with postage and other things over time, in the hope that taxpayers wouldn't have to write a check every year to keep the Postal Service going. And it was supposed to provide universal service, which has been defined as delivery to every address in the United States 6 days per week. And the Postal Service did an amazing job of achieving that mandate through recessions and wars and difficult times until about 2006, when the economy turned down shortly after that, and there was a new law that imposed a prepay requirement on it for its retirees' health care costs. I think the combination of things since 2006 have really been hard on the Postal Service. It tried to react so up till 2006, I think they did a great job. Then after that, they realized the mail volumes were declining, and they had to cut costs. And I think the Postmasters General, two of them, have done a very good job of trying to reduce costs in the face of these declining revenues. But again, Paul, there's only so much you can do to reduce costs and still meet your universal service obligation, which is delivery of mail to every address 6 days a week. There's a certain minimum number of people and trucks and sorting centers that you need to make that happen, where you can't cut past that point. So I think the Postal Service has done an amazing job of doing what Congress asked it to do in the 1970 Act and to reacting to the problems that it's faced since 2006. But I think, Paul, that we've in some sense hit a wall here where they really need that additional commercial freedom if they're going to be sustainable.
Rick Geddes is an associate professor in the Department of Policy Analysis and Management at Cornell University. He joined us by phone from Ithaca, New York. Rick Geddes, thank you so much for making time to be with us today on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for inviting me, Paul.
And we'll have more Essential Pittsburgh after this break. You're listening to 90.5 WESA.